Welcome to the Back 'em Down podcast. It's your host, Coach Johnson. In this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about some NBA news regarding the NBA draft, as well as talk about the All-NBA teams, first, second, and third teams, and also the NBA All-Rookie teams as well with the first team and second team. Also going to break down Game 1 of the Celtics Heat series and Game 7 of the Clippers Nuggets series. Let's start the episode off by talking about the NBA draft. The NBA has officially announced that the official date for the NBA draft will be November 18th. So now we have a set date to look forward to with the NBA draft and the days before, as they are going to try and hold a combine to get the collegiate players in to whatever facility that they're able to get into. I don't know if they're going to use the same one that they do in Chicago or if they're going to have to look at using a different facility depending on the virus and what places will allow for them to come and be in a bubble setting for the period of time they need for a combine. Now let's talk about the All-NBA teams. First, let's talk about the first team, as we had Luka Doncic making it in his second season as a pro. To put things into perspective, LeBron James didn't make an All-NBA team until his third season in the league. Then we had James Harden, LeBron James, setting an NBA record with his 16th selection of his career. Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then rounding out the All-NBA first team, Anthony Davis. Now with the All-NBA second team, we have Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, and Nikola Jokic. With the All-NBA third team, we had Russell Westbrook, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, and Rudy Gobert. I think for the most part, they got this right. I do think there was a few places where they could have made a different selection, especially on that third team, as I don't think Ben Simmons did enough this season to be an All-NBA type player. I don't think Rudy Gobert should have been an All-NBA selection either. You know, the biggest omissions for me looking at this list is you don't have Joel Embiid in there, who is the best big in the league. You have Bam Adebayo, who had an incredible season for Miami, and then Bradley Beal. So for me, I would look at the All-NBA third team list and take Ben Simmons out, take Rudy Gobert out, and insert Joel Embiid and Bradley Beal into their respective spots. But for 13 out of the 15 players on the All-NBA list, I think the voters got it right. And you could say that this is an actual W for the media and the voters, as they got these picks right for the most part, but still left out a few players who were more deserving than a few of the selections made. Now I want to talk about the All-NBA rookie teams. In the first team, we had Ja Morant, Kendrick Nunn, Zion Williamson, Brandon Clark, and Eric Pascal. In the second team, we had Kobe White, Tyler Hero, Terrence Davis, the second, PJ Washington, and Rui Hachimura. I think they got this right for the most part. Some people would probably overreact and think Tyler Hero needs to be in the first team for the all-rookie teams, but this isn't including the bubble and the playoffs. This is all stuff that they did leading up to the break in the season. The only problem I have with this list is in the second team. While Terrence Davis, going from being undrafted and having a solid season for Toronto, I really think RJ Barrett deserves to be in that position. You know, pick to try to help the Knicks transition into a new era and bring back the Knicks brand, help them elevate the organization. And I think he had some success in doing that. And I think he had a solid year throughout the year with his playmaking ability for his teammates, his ability to get to the rim. And I thought he defended very well. You know, other than that, I think the voters got this one right as well. The thing, you know, that I think the voters need to think about and the NBA together is just doing away with the positions when it comes to the all-NBA, all-rookie teams, as they do have it set up where it's two guards, two forwards, and a big. Basketball has went away from that, so you should pick the best 15 players in the league for the all-NBA teams and then the best 10 rookies for the all-rookie teams. Now let's jump into the action of talking about Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. In the first quarter, we saw a lot of the defense mismatches, trying to match up, and just switching in general as both teams really switched like crazy. There was two times that Miami was able to get Jimmy Butler guarded by Kemba Walker, but Boston was able to rotate out of that before Miami was able to get the ball back to Butler. You know, I don't worry for Miami with Adebayo switching onto the Celtics perimeter guys because he'll be fine due to how well he moves his feet on the perimeter. You know, what I do worry about is who is going to box out Daniel Tice when shots do go up. As most of the time, a guard will be trying to box out Daniel Tice, and he does a great job as an offensive rebounder. The Celtics were playing Kemba Walker primarily off the ball to start sets, try to get him freed up off of screens and dribble handoffs to just give him more space to operate and find his offense early. This forced Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, and Jaylen Brown to be the ones initiating early offense for Boston. The Heat went to the zone early in the game. I thought they might hold off until the second half, so Boston could not adjust to it early in the game. And the fact that they did this early in the game is just goes to show how much the Celtics have struggled against the zone. They did in the series versus Toronto, but hopefully that time facing it, seeing it multiple times in the Toronto series will help them even more in the series against Miami. You know, Brad Stevens, before the series got started, was talking about how great of a cutting team that Miami is, especially on backdoor cuts. And you saw this on display big time in that first quarter. But at the end of the first quarter, Boston was up 26-18. In the second quarter, the Celtics are getting back-cutted repeatedly, mentioning that before in the previous quarter breakdown. And it helps Miami to be able to do this because of the passing ability of Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk. They do such a great job of making those passes from the top of the key, like we see with Nurkic and Portland. You know, this is just something to keep an eye on as the series progresses of how much Miami tries to utilize this type of action in their offense against Boston. Boston was doing a better job versus Miami's zone than they did at any point in the Toronto series. Miami finally started to find their offense after scoring only 18 points in the first quarter, as they scored on 9 consecutive offensive possessions in the second quarter. You know, as I've mentioned in a previous episode, I think Bam Adebayo is going to be able to extend his range out to the 3-point because his jumper is already so smooth from the 18 to 15 feet range. And this is going to really open up the floor for him because of how well he does attack bigs off the bounce. And once he develops more of a shooting threat from the perimeter and people have to play him close, his offensive repertoire is going to shoot through the roof. But with the big quarter from the Heat in the second quarter, the game was all tied up at 55 apiece at going into halftime. Third quarter, one thing I was worried about for the Celtics is that Marcus Smart was leading the Celtics in field goal attempts, and I just don't think that's a winning formula for them. But also with how many shots he was hitting, usually when Boston gets a game like this out of Marcus Smart, then they're more likely to win. You know, Boston was able to get Kemba Walker on a switch with Adebayo early in this half and was able to get to the free throw line. I was hoping that maybe the free throws would get him going as he struggled in that first half to score. The interesting part of the series is that matchups aren't carrying as much value with how much each team is switching. And going back to talking about Bam Adebayo's skill set, that really helped keep things together at times for Miami in this quarter. As I really think Adebayo's skill set is similar to Al Horford's. And just like I've mentioned earlier, eventually Al Horford added the range on his jump shot that I expect Adebayo to do as well. The Heat zone in this game was different from what the Raptors did because they were putting their guards at the bottom of the zone, allowing them to move up their wings to the front of the zone, giving their zone a lot of size up top, with Butler, Crowder, Iguodala, and Derrick Jones Jr. And it's making things hard on Boston to find, you know, ball movement around the perimeter and touching multiple sides of the floor, trying to swing it back and forth and make that zone move. The thing that the Celtics need to do is drive the gaps and screen off that top defender to create an advantage for them offensively against that 2-3 zone. But there was just way too much dribbling for the Celtics against the defense. And the Heat were doing a great job of digging in with an extra man and creating some turnovers. Luckily, Boston was hitting their open shots in this quarter, and Miami's offense cooled off after it picked up the pace in that second quarter. So the Celtics had a big lead up 12 as they were up 83-71 going into the final period. You could tell that Spoelstra really wanted the pace of this game to pick up. And at one point during the broadcast, you could hear him screaming, "Go, go, go." And he wanted the Heat to run whenever they can. This wasn't Jaylen Brown's best defensive game. There was multiple times where he was losing track of his guy on offense and getting back cut, or they were just cutting once he turned his head on them, and there Miami was able to get a lot of easy baskets in this quarter. Miami was able to get into the bonus for the final 8 minutes of the game. So it was going to be important for Boston to try not to foul for the rest of this quarter and keep Miami on the line, being able to score without the clock running. I thought it was a great job by Kemba Walker to be aggressive and drive it versus settling for the jump shot, as, you know, his just jump shot was not falling in this quarter and really throughout the whole game, you know. And Miami was able to climb back into this game, making it close late. And you thought maybe Celtics are going to be able to pull away at the end after a big shot from Kemba to give them a 2-possession lead. But then Tyler Hero answered it with a big three of his own to keep it at a 1-possession game. Jay Crowder followed that by making a great defensive play for a stop, which led to the big corner three by Jimmy Butler to send the game into overtime after a missed free throw by Marcus Smart. And we're tied at 106. In overtime, Boston's ball movement really died out, especially in this period. And it really reminds you of the games 5-7 played out versus Toronto. Tyler Hero continues to put together a complete game, as he had 12, 10, and 9 on the night, really showcasing his scoring ability, but also his improvement as a passer playmaker. Kemba Walker stepped up again and hit another big shot off of his patent step back that we have seen many, many times. But it was Jimmy G Buckets who answered with a strong and one finish through Jason Tatum. You know, the only benefit from that sequence is that for the Celtics is that Butler went quickly and left 12 seconds on the clock. Jason Tatum made a great play, got past his defender, and went for the jam. Bam Adebayo denied it cleanly. It was such a phenomenal block, one of the top three blocks, defensive plays that I've seen in the playoffs in my lifetime watching basketball. The Heat go on to win 117-114 and take a 1-0 series lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. I will be back shortly to wrap up the show after a quick word from our sponsor, Anchor. Now let's talk about the biggest talking point of the NBA right now, Game 7 of the Clippers-Nuggets series. The Nuggets have fought back from a 3-1 deficit for the second time in these playoffs, looking to capitalize on the momentum gained in the playoffs. First quarter, Clippers looked to they were getting off to a good start. Patrick Beverley looking in control, was doing a really good job of setting up his teammates early. You know, on the other end of the floor, the Clippers were double teaming Jokic to get the ball out of his hands, and Jokic was making him pay, hitting a lot of the cutters, finding open teammates on the backside of the floor for open threes. And the Clippers kind of left a few points on the board as they only shot 40.2%. But they were getting a lot of quality looks, and we were all tied up at 24 at the end of the first quarter. In the second quarter, it was a game of runs. Early in the second quarter, Paul George picked up his three fouls. And Doc Rivers said the day before that, you know, his foul trouble has been one of the Clippers' biggest problems, not allowing the Clippers to get into any type of rhythm with Paul George on the floor. A lot of great things were happening for Nuggets anytime Jokic was in the game and the offense was running through him. An important thing that I thought was going to carry the Clippers to the finish line in this game is that the supporting cast finally seemed to come alive and started to make plays, especially Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Jamal Murray was awesome throughout the first half, but really in the second quarter, as he scored 20 points in this quarter and was able to keep Denver afloat when things were getting out of hand. If you can even say that with this Nuggets team, as they seem to enjoy being down by a large margin and fighting back to get into the game. And, you know, with the rhythm that Jamal Murray was able to get into in the second quarter, you just thought maybe this was going to be a monster night for him with the open space he is able to create in this game. The NBA is such a make or miss league, and you just thought maybe some of these wide open shots that the Clippers were missing were going to come back to haunt them, especially with how well the Nuggets were shooting, especially from two-point range, as they were shooting 72.7%. But even with the big push by Jamal Murray and the Nuggets, after the Clippers built a 12-point lead in this quarter, the Clippers were only up to 56-54 going into halftime. In the third quarter, things really started to change, as Denver's defense really started to assert themselves. And you have to give them a lot of credit on that side of the floor. The Nuggets were everywhere. They were rotating on time, forcing contested threes, and collapsing in the paint anytime that Kawhi Leonard tried to drive it and get to the middle of the floor. Lou Williams, after seeming to pick up his play in the first half, really went back to how he's been playing throughout the bubble after coming back from his quarantine time, not being able to find a rhythm and just couldn't buy a bucket in the second half. Paul George and Kawhi only had one combined free throw attempt so far in this game. And the most impressive thing is that Denver forced them outside and even gave them a few open looks, but completely shut off the paint and did not foul. Maybe if Kawhi and Paul George wouldn't have settled for so many jump shots at times and were able to get to the free throw line, they would have been able to get into a rhythm offensively that would have helped generate points and help the Clippers keep their lead in the game. You know, another big aspect that changed this game was how well the Nuggets were cutting on offense and generating easy baskets. This is the problem with doubling Jokic, is that he is such a great passer that you leave yourself susceptible to cutters in their offense. But the Nuggets were able to take the lead in this quarter, going up by 8 points, 82-74, going into the fourth quarter. The best thing for the Nuggets going into the fourth quarter, at the end of the third quarter, into the beginning of the fourth quarter, is that Jokic was able to get rest. And the big minutes that the Nuggets had while he was on the bench came from their ability to steal points and extend the lead for when Jokic was going to come back into the game. And this was the beginning of the end for the Clippers, as they were not able to hit anything from the field. And it was just alarming, and it kind of caught me off guard and left me a little bit speechless at times, because it was just heading to a total disastrous collapse for the Clippers. Nothing going down for Kawhi or Paul George. And I would have never bet how passive Kawhi Leonard would have been in this Game 7. You know, doing research before the game and seeing that Kawhi has only performed well in one Game 7, which was last year in Toronto, when he scored 41, but before then, he had never scored more than 19 points in a Game 7. So it kind of made me weary of what was going to happen in this game. But I thought maybe with the transformation that took place last year with Kawhi in Toronto, that he was going to be able to do that again in this Game 7. You know, but one thing that also struck out to me watching this game, and even the series, is how much the Clippers let the Nuggets off the hook by not attacking Jokic in pick-and-roll situations. But Jamal Murray caps off his big night and sends the Clippers home right in front of their bench with a fadeaway three over Kawhi Leonard. Just an incredible showing by the Nuggets in Game 5, 6, and 7 to pull off the 3-1 comeback and set themselves with a Western Conference Finals matchup with the Los Angeles Lakers. Talking a little bit about that series coming up, I saw an interesting note today on Twitter talking about the 2009 playoffs with Kobe and the 2020 playoffs with LeBron. In the 2009 playoffs, Kobe beat the Rockets in the second round, beat the Nuggets in the conference finals, and won his fourth ring in Orlando. And now we have the 2020 playoffs with LeBron. They've beat the Rockets in the second round. They're facing the Nuggets in the conference finals. And he's trying to win his fourth ring in Orlando. Crazy how that is all, you know, adding up. And it's going to be an interesting storyline moving forward with that in perspective. And that wraps it up for this episode of the Back 'Em Down podcast. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. If you want to become a monthly contributor to the show, please click the link at the bottom of the show notes. I hope everyone enjoys their Wednesday. We're almost to the weekend, halfway through the week. We have to wait till tomorrow night to get Game 2 of the Boston-Miami series, where Boston will look to bounce back and tie the series up at one game apiece. But until then, everyone, take care, and I hope you come back for the next episode of the Back 'Em Down podcast.